Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening, TSN1290.ca. Good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week, the final Illegal Curve show for the year 2015. And we're going to bring you a special episode of the program. Given that it's the final show, given that it's almost the end of 2015, we're going to do a Winnipeg Jets roundtable, looking back at the entirety of 2015 as it was for the Winnipeg Jets. Joining us in studio, the regular colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Scott Billick joins us from the Winnipeg Free Press. We're going to get Patrick Williams of NHL.com. He covers the Jets for that fine website. He's going to join us on the phone line coming up momentarily. We want to hear from you on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. In the second hour of the show, we're also going to open up the phone lines, so we want to hear from you about your sort of Jets in review, Jets year in review memories in the second hour of the program. But our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve is always open. Patrick Williams as well joins us on the line from Toronto. Patrick, good evening. Thanks for joining us. Maybe not. We'll get Patrick up here in a second.
Well, we're here, Drew. Yeah, Scott so is here. Say, Richie's can, here. We're here.
I gotta tell you, I thought Patrick made a great point there.
In the interim, I will say hello, of course, to Richard, to Ezra, to Scott. Gentlemen, thanks very much. Of course, well, Richard and Ezra, I don't really have to thank you. You have to be here. Scott, appreciate you coming on joining us on this Wednesday evening, a snowy Wednesday evening here in Winnipeg, to as we conduct this Winnipeg Jets roundtable.
Anytime, guys.
Appreciate that. So, you know, we wanted to start by, we're going to divide it up into four segments. Look back at, say, the January to April portion of the year, of the year 2015, when the Jets made the big trade involving Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian, sort of changed the entire dynamic of the team at that point in time. We'll look in the second segment at the Winnipeg Jets offseason that just passed, an offseason that people thought was going to have a lot more activity. Mm-hmm. It didn't. We'll look forward. In the third segment, we'll look at what's happened so far in this season for the 2015 year for the Jets. I don't think I need to tell anybody when I'm telling any secrets when I say the Jets have been struggling, of course. And in the final segment of this hour, we'll look forward to 2016 for the Winnipeg Jets. As I mentioned, I want to start with the Evander Kane trade, which occurred early in 2015, you know, with the Jets obviously shipping Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian out to Buffalo, getting back Tyler Myers and Drew Stafford, among some other individuals, of course. That trade sort of changed the dynamic of the team as it got the legs behind it to get into the playoffs in a very competitive Western Conference. Patrick, wanted to start with you regarding that trade. You know, obviously, hindsight 2020, it's now been, you know, the end of 2015. That trade, Evander Kane, Zach Bogosian, getting in Drew Stafford and Tyler Myers, you think that's as, did the Jets do as well now with getting in that return as we thought they did at that time?
Well, yeah, I would say that they have. Considering the circumstances under which the trade happened, I think if you're a Jets fan or you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, I think you have to be happy with the deal. Their hand was forced. Now you can argue that their hand was forced because they let it go too long, but in any event, I thought the return they got was pretty solid. They got a capable defenseman like Tyler Myers. They got a forward in Drew Stafford, who was a big part of the push to the playoffs last season, and it's had a solid start to this season. And they got some prospects. So I'm not sold on Joel Armia yet, but that's, I think, the case with any young prospect. There's always a question. So, but by and large, I think they did okay with the trade.
What about it, Scott? Sort of before the trade happened, you knew what the Winnipeg Jets' identity was last season, and that was a team that was very physical, would always forecheck furiously. They would leave no body check unchecked, as the case may be. You know, looking back now, you know, hindsight, as I mentioned, 2020. Good trade still in your mind, even given the struggles that you've seen so far this season?
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the things with, I mean, being in the locker room like I have been, one of the things that seemed to happen after that trade was there's kind of just this weight lifted off the team. It seemed like there was some stuff that was going on before the trade, obviously with the locker room, the shower incident, that sort of thing.
The tracksuit incident.
The tracksuit, right, yes. those things just seemed to I guess maybe hold the team back a little bit. And when this trade went through, they got some new guys, from fresh guys who are maybe not in the best situation in Buffalo, and they came here. And, you know, I think the fans and those type of people, they love these guys, and these guys went out and played their hearts out. And I think that's kind of what led them to come together as a cohesive unit, and it put them into the playoffs.
I think you make a good point, Scott, and the Jets were playing well up until that point last year, mm-hmm. when the trade was made, and after that it really galvanized them even more, because I think the first major turning point in the season last year was when they had all of those injuries to the defense, and a guy like Ben Sherrod came in, and Adam Pardy came in, and they really played well defensively as a unit, even though you could kind of see maybe the play slipping a little bit when a guy like Jacob Trouba went down, for example, but I think you make a good point. I mean, you look at it now, and sure, Evander Kane is scoring some goals for Buffalo, and Zach Bogosian is playing pretty well, but Tyler Myers is on a four-game point streak right now. Drew Stafford, after starting the season on the third line, mm-hmm. is producing on the second line with Mark Scheifele and Matthew Perreault. So you look at it now, and the Jets have definitely won in the short term, and sure, you know, it remains to be seen what happens with Armia and Brendan Lemieux and Roslovic, who they got with the first-round pick, but certainly, considering that Cheveldayoff really was forced to make that trade after the supposed track suit incident, it's definitely worked out well. Maybe not so much at this point in the season, but certainly last year, Jets making the playoffs for the first time since coming over from Atlanta.
Patrick, of course, sir, as we go, you know, throughout this roundtable, please jump in. Obviously, you're not in studio with us, joining us from Toronto on the phone. So when you hear something that gets your hackles up, be sure to jump in there.
You know, I think it's interesting because it did change that trade. I thought the Jets made out pretty well. I don't think they stole those guys, like maybe some thought, because the players they were trading were talented, flawed but talented. And what they brought to the table was, I mean, the two guys they dealt weren't the smartest players on the ice, didn't have the best sense of the game, are both exceptional skaters and are very physical. So there are aspects of their game that you grew tired of if you watched it a lot, and that probably happens with most players. But they are aspects of the game that, especially the way the game is played, without the interference and without the hooking and holding, if you can skate and you can hit, then that's a valuable commodity. Now, what they got smarter. They move the puck better. They make plays with each other more. They do seem, and I'm not in the room like Scott is, and as he goes into the visitor room, obviously Patrick is, so they would have a better read of the chemistry, but just from afar, it seemed like there was a better chemistry for the squad. But it's interesting that, you know, the qualities we talked about, those players, maybe not immediately because of the emotion of the playoff run, but you have seen the team now, this team we have today, and we'll talk more about that later in the roundtable here, is very different than that, than the team of last January, February. Just the style of play. You know, you hear talking points, a lot of national, mm-hmm. you know, pundits will say, big, strong, fast. They're not as physical as they were last year by any means. And their identity has changed, not just from the veterans who left, to older guys who left via free agency, but the trade. And so their identity has changed. Now, is it for the worse? I'm not so sure it's for the worse. Is it for the better? I don't know if it's for the better either, but it's different.
You know, it's just a function. I mean, you know, I think it's a function of, you know, the Jets' hand was forced, as we mentioned, the tracksuit incident in Vancouver and everything else. It was, you know, what was bubbling underneath the surface for a long time finally came and bubbled over and forced Kevin Cheveldayoff, you know, his hand. Because truthfully, we don't know. I mean, we know now that, you know, and we suspected all along that Evander Kane had requested a trade out of Winnipeg each and every offseason and really was, you know, quite open with management about his desire to play elsewhere. And, you know, in radio interviews he conducted, you could also understand that. But, you know, it's hard to even know if that incident doesn't happen. Is he still a member of the Winnipeg Jets? I mean, Patrick, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, if that incident doesn't happen, I think it would have, something else would have happened eventually. It was a relationship that had more than run its course, and had been rather toxic. And I think when a player is allegedly, or whoever you want to believe, that for a trade, I mean, I think you have to take him at his word that he doesn't want to be there, and you need to move on. I mean, the relationship at that point is already, it's already strained, and that's kind of the final relationship. So, you know, it went on way too long, and But that said, I do think, considering where the situation went, they made the best of the situation, and I thought that they definitely, you could feel that way that first day, almost when the team came back off the road trip, the change was palpable. It was a completely different room. Vander Kane's a big personality in that room, and he was gone, and same thing with Zach Bogosian, and you can just see that they got a jolt from that move, and then a couple of weeks later, they brought in a player like Lee Stempniak, a real solid pro, and the whole vibe in that room was different, and it was they were off to the playoffs from there, and I haven't seen that vibe in the room this season as much, and it's interesting to just, it's almost been three stages of this team's personality in less than a year.
I think Patrick makes some good points, and I'd be interested to hear what Scott has to say, because he's been in the room this year as well. And you almost get the feeling that what the Jets are going through right now is kind of similar with Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien. I think there is a bit of an elephant in the room with those contracts, and it remains to be seen if one or both of those players are going to be signed and are going to be with the Jets next year. And I don't think that necessarily, you know, is a distraction on a nightly basis, but I think since the season started, it has been, and I think there has been a changing dynamic a little bit in the room and with this Jets team. It's a younger team, we know that, with Ehlers and Patan and Kopp and then Burmistrov coming back, and you get the feeling that there's almost a little bit of uncertainty with a possible changing of the guard with the kind of veteran core of this team that came over from Atlanta. So I think the Jets are at a similar crossroads with Ladd and Byfuglien that they were with Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian last year.
Yeah, I think it's a little different, too, though, in the sense that, you know, I think Byfuglien's obviously loved around here. Andrew Ladd's been the captain for the entirety of the franchise being back in Winnipeg here. But I think that any time that there's these rumors swirling around, there's always going to be that distraction, whether the players say that it is or not. I think it is a distraction. Then you add on, you know, the talk of, you know, whether it's media-induced or not, the talk of Jacob Trouba being traded for Travis Hamonic and all that kind of stuff, right? And so I don't know. I don't know if that's weighing down the team right now. They're obviously losing. They're not doing very well. So that also weighs on players, veteran players, young players alike. And young players are trying to take cues from the veteran players. And, you know, how do they pick themselves up from something like this? And obviously we saw last night and the last couple of days where, you know, they're going into the Christmas break not very good and all the stuff Maurice said and that sort of thing. So I think there's an amalgamation of things here that that are compounding, and that's kind of, yeah, taken its toll on this team so far.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because there are distractions, right? And you talk about those distractions, and you traded Kane more because he was a distraction than anything else, right? I mean, he wasn't... Sure, he had his flaws in his game, but if you were to take the distraction element and the problems maybe you had in the room, if you just took his on-ice play,
yeah,
you could certainly deal with that. That's a skilled player.
He wasn't a positive influence on or off the ice.
Well, what Richard's saying is if you just take him for what he is as a player and forget about... If he had no personality at all, if he's a complete blank, you know, blank slate, you would still be a member of the team because his skill set is what it is.
Well, and maybe would be. And then the point to Scott's point about, well, if you're trying to, if there's distractions, and the point last year was to eliminate distractions, and if you, not to say there won't always be distractions. It, you know, this is very fluid, and there's players under contract. But if you're trying to eliminate distractions, and this year you've kind of created your own distraction, like in my mind, we'll talk about it more later. But they've created the distraction and not dealing with it by now. Then you kind of defeat the purpose a little bit of what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sure, yeah, you know, I think the Kane distraction was a little different because it affected the players in a way that, you know, maybe it divided the room. I mean, I can't
sure.
say, you know, there was obviously, I would imagine there was players that like Kane and dislike Kane, just like any, you know, you go to work, people dislike each other. It is what it is, but you find a way to work together.
Rich and I both dislike Drew, so.
we've been managing to work together for all these years, it's true.
I'm just not sure that, you know, they always talk about the grass is greener on the other side. Sometimes, you know, guys need to find a new place to work. And I think in the end, this trade made sense because of that.
guys, let's go to break. When we come back on the other side, I want to talk about the Winnipeg Jets offseason that just passed, the fact Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien are still unsigned members of the Winnipeg Jets.
Hopefully Patrick has a good long-distance plan.
Yes, exactly. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week, our 2015 Jets Year in Review Roundtable. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Free Press, Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock of Illegal Curve, Patrick Williams of NHL.com joins us on the phone line as well. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Spend this segment talking about the Winnipeg Jets offseason, the one that just passed, of course, between April and September.
Seems like a pretty long time ago now.
Yeah, I know. It seems like a real long time ago.
It's only about 6 months ago, but
yeah. Patrick, if I was to go back and I was to ask you on July 1st, what odds would you have given me? What percentage did you think that the Winnipeg Jets were going to re-sign Andrew Ladd and or Dustin Byfuglien?
Well, I didn't have a great sense that they were going to sign them or not sign them, but I would have thought it would be 100% that you would have had a resolution one way or the other in terms of either you did sign them and then you move on with your life, or you decide that you don't have a deal there and you move them along in a trade and you get what you can get and you avoid this whole, well, it's become half season long drama so far, kind of this cloud hanging over the team. And yet, from July 1st to almost January 1st, 6 months, here we are, and there's no apparent resolution, and there doesn't appear to be one on the horizon from everything that I can see and that I hear. So it's sort of a holding pattern that they're in right now, and I do think that's hanging over the team, and especially given the two players involved. I mean, Andrew Ladd's your captain, and Dustin Byfuglien is pretty much your unofficial captain in terms of the stature that he occupies in that dressing room. So I wasn't sure if they were going to be signed, but I did think there was going to be a resolution, and there hasn't been.
Scott, same question goes to you. With today, December 23rd, how surprised are you that there is no resolution one way or the other, like Patrick just alluded to? And what impact do you think that is having on this dressing room?
Well, I mean, like I said, the distraction angle there is, as well. But am I surprised that there's no resolution? That it didn't get done in the summertime, and then now that I don't know how much work goes into doing that during the season, to be honest. I think that Byfuglien costs too much, or at least they don't want to pay what the going rate is for him. And Ladd, maybe the same thing. Ladd's the captain. Is he replaceable? And who are they going to replace him with? I mean, they didn't really replace anybody this offseason. They didn't really bring anybody in. I mean, if we're talking about the offseason, and there was Lee Stepniak, could have had him for, I think it was $1 million.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
For the year. I thought that was a steal, and I think everybody thought that was a steal. The guy had, I think it was 10 points in his 18 games here, 6 goals. He only had 18 goals in 53 games with the Rangers when he was there. So he was good, and he was a great guy. He plugged him in on the fourth line, and I think the Jets could use that this year, especially right now when you have Joel Armia or a guy like that who's still on the roster playing right now.
Rich, as we've talked about this on our various shows for a lot over the last 6 months, mm-hmm. and it is amazing to me that we're still here on December 23rd, yeah. And then there's no resolution.
So very surprising to me. I mean, Kevin Chevalier was conservative in nature, so I'm not going to say shocking, but very surprising. And just another angle on this, I know we talked about it a lot in the show, but another angle on this is, Steven Stamkos, I mean, Kopitar looks like it'll get done, but Steven Stamkos and the Lightning, their struggles aside, talent on paper, that's a cup or bust team, meaning, like, if they keep Stamkos, they're going for the cup.
Sure.
and they'll take the risk of trying to win the Cup and losing him if they do that. Like, the Jets, even if they were to keep these guys, wouldn't realistically think they're going to win the Cup.
Even if they were having a good year.
Yeah, even if they think they were having a really good year, in my opinion.
Sure.
So it's a different playing field there from that angle. To me, it makes it even, it almost makes it even worse.
Ezzy?
Yeah, I would agree with that, Richie. And, you know, you mentioned we have talked about this for, it seems like, an eternity, certainly the last 4 months.
You were there in Miami. You were at the draft representing us. I mean, how surprised were you in Miami when there was no news of a trade? There was no news of a signing. There was, besides the draft picks, there was really no news at all. I mean, you know, Rich and I were back here, and we were both surprised that nothing of that nature came.
Yeah, and if you go back to that time after the draft, you were expecting the Jets to either re-sign Lee Stempniak or Michael Frolik or replace them with another sign. And we talked about some of the guys that were out there, whether it's a Brad Boies or a Curtis Glencross, kind of guys, veteran guys that you would put on the third line. But as far as Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien goes, I think I agree with Patrick and Scott. And we are in a holding pattern, and I would have expected Andrew Ladd to be signed before Dustin Byfuglien for the simple reason that Dustin Byfuglien is less of a certainty than Andrew Ladd. Andrew Ladd, you know, he's not going to miss a lot of time due to injuries. You know that he's going to be kind of around the 50 to 60 point mark. You know what you're going to get out of him. Dustin Byfuglien, you know what you're going to get out of him offensively. He's a top offensive defenseman, but as far as his defensive play, that's where there's a bit of an uncertainty. But I think, guys, this has certainly been a
problem. But if you know it's uncertainty, maybe you know what you're getting from him.
Right. Well, that's a good point, Richie. And I think as far as, you know, some of the veterans that Scott talked about, I said this for weeks that I thought that they should have signed Lee Stempniak. And look, he's got 18 points in 26 games, or sorry, 26 points in 35 games. Mm-hmm. Frolik's got 18 points for 16 points for the Calgary Flames. And you look at who was replacing these players, and it was all young players. And that includes Alexander Burmistrov, Drew. And, you know, this isn't to say that Nikolaj Ehlers doesn't have a very bright future. But if you look at some of these younger players,
well,
they've struggled.
Chris Thorburn's in your top nine, is he?
Right. Well, but Nick Batan was sent down. Adam Lowry was sent down. Burmistrov hasn't been that third-line center that they've needed, certainly a producing third-line center. And so that's even more reason why they probably should have signed an unrestricted free agent forward, or at the very least made a move to kind of solidify that bottom six.
Well, to that point there, Ezzy, sort of about the youth movement, Patrick Williams of NHL.com joins us on the line as well. Patrick, would you agree with the point that Ezzy's making, that the Jets sort of seem to have rushed this youth movement that the team decided it needed to embark on, and that the youth isn't ready to step in like the Jets thought they were?
Well, an important part of draft and develop is you can't forget the develop part.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And they seem to have the draft part down more or less okay, and bringing in some good players at the draft table, but that's only the start. I mean, from there, you have to actually turn them into NHL players. And they've gotten the raw ingredients, right? But the chef in the kitchen hasn't been able to turn it into an actual, you know, a meal. So it's a situation where it's one thing to bring one or two players in line, but to bring four players like they did, and not just bring them into line, but expect them to play important roles. Third line center, like you said, with Alexander Burmistrov, is that's a big role, and that's a role they need to be productive and, producing something, and it's not. Same thing with Nick Ehlers. He's been there in a third line role. And what has his role been, and what has his production been?
It's got one goal.
Adam Lowry,
games.
That was another. Yeah. Exactly. Adam Lowry, I mean, I do think that was a little bit more unforeseen. But, I mean, on the other hand, they were also talking about him as a first line center in training camp, which I like when I heard that, it was where did that come from?
Yeah.
It seemed to me that everything they planned was a best case scenario, where everything was going to go perfectly, and that was the plan. And it's an old saying that I heard from a scout a long time ago, but hope is not a plan. And it didn't seem like there was a backup plan if the best case plan fell through. And that's why here we are, in December, and the team is pretty much out of the playoff race. And, it just doesn't seem that you can expect to replace Elise Stepniak, Yuri Talusti, even a Jim Slater, Michael Frolik. That's four key players to expect four kids to step in and not miss a beat, it's just a, I mean, if that had happened, I mean, they would have had to be, been counting their blessings, because that's just not something you can count on. But I do think they actually did think it would happen. And so as a result, here we are.
And to even just expand on what Pat's talking about, I think the key thing, and as he mentioned it, is Michael Frolik. I mean, Calgary signed him, I thought, for a good price point. I don't know if the Jets could have got him for that, whatever. But Michael Frolik could play anywhere, and I'd rather have Frolik on the top line when Landry Ladd gets sent down than Chris Thorburn. And I know it was a nice night for Chris Thorburn, and whatever. It worked out, but...
You're referencing when Ladd got punished against...
I am, yes.
Against the Rangers on Friday.
Right.
Sure.
But, like, Frolik was that guy. And you talk about building a team around, you know, having guys around. Frolik's only 27 years old. He's not, like, you know, 30 years old, 33 years old. You know, he's not a guy. Like, you can build a young team and still have a 27-year-old on it. So I think that Frolik was probably their biggest loss in the summer. And replacing him with, you know, Burmistrov or whoever it is, I don't think that's panned out just in the way that... The way that I saw Michael Frolik in the dressing room, he's a guy that he brings it every night, and he's just one of the very honest, hardworking guy, kind of like a Jim Slater, but Michael Frolik's a lot more skilled in terms of what he can do around the ice, and I think the Jets are sorely missing that this year.
I think it's a great point, because he can play first line to Scott's point, second line, third line, left wing, right wing, they even threw him at center at times, power play, penalty kill. It's Paul Maurice is most affected by that because of the lack of flexibility, and you mentioned, Scott, and rightfully so, in terms of what happened with Ladd. I think another thing to tack on to Patrick's point there in the draft and develop, some teams are forced into the youth movement by the cap.
Sure. Arizona.
So what you have, is, you know, Chicago's got to play some young guys because they're so close against
Chicago,
the cap,
yeah,
or whatever it may be. Certain teams are. The Jets are the bottom cap team. So that really shouldn't be, that isn't an issue for them. What? So rushing the young players on that basis, not saying that they are, but if you were, like other teams are, that shouldn't be a problem for you.
Well, it goes to your point, you know, about the cap. I mean, what was the downside? What was the harm in offering Lee Stepniak that $1 million contract? If he gets outplayed for a spot and he ends up in the press box, so be it.
So he's Alex Semin, you know?
It costs you $1 million. It's nothing that's going to affect the bottom line. And I never quite, I mean, we were talking about this off air. We've talked about it before. This team has suffered no injuries to their forward group, and they can't score on the road at all. And can you imagine if, you know, what this top nine, top 12 would look like if there was an injury?
Yeah, and that goes back to it. And to sum it up, I mean, it really comes back to the Jets are sorely missing that veteran presence in their bottom six. Yeah. The defense hasn't changed much. And you mentioned they haven't had very many injuries. And, you know, they've been forced now to call up Joel Armia and Matt Halischuk and play them on the fourth line because Adam Lowry and Nick Petan have struggled in that role, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's easy in hindsight to say that. But that's I mean, 26 points for Lee Stempniak on New Jersey. I mean, who saw that coming, right? I mean,
worth $1 million.
Oh, it was a great signing. And it was originally a PTO. So I think right now the young guys are struggling. And that's not to say that there isn't a bright future ahead. I mean, Nick Ehlers, I mean, you could tell that he's got superstar potential, definitely. But for all of these young players, 19, 20-year-old players like Ehlers and Kopp and Patan, they've struggled. And that was a worst-case scenario. Whereas Patrick was saying earlier, they were hoping for the best-case scenario.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the 2015 season so far, the one that we're currently in. And we'll ask the question, why has the Jets' defensive play fallen off so dramatically from last season? You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week, our 2015 Year in Review Winnipeg Jets Roundtable, with myself, Richard Pollock, and Ezra Ginsberg of Illegal Curve, Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Free Press, Patrick Williams of NHL.com joins us on the phone line as well. This segment is brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Patrick, before the break, I posed the question so you can mull it over during the commercials. Why this Jets team this year has completely lost the defensive identity we thought that they had inherited and they thought that they had developed and they thought that they had ingrained in their system last year. You know, there's the question to you, Patrick. You know, why is this team so much different on the defensive side of the game than they are currently, than they were last year, Barnamy?
Well, I think a lot of what happened last year with their defensive success was the fact that you really had built up a nice base of forwards there, especially the bottom six. For the first time since the team had come to Winnipeg, you could actually roll four quality lines, and now you can't. You can roll two and a half-ish lines. And so much of your defensive play comes from what your forwards are doing. It's not just your defenseman and your goalie. It's the forwards back checking and the back pressure. It's them picking up their assignments. It's them not blowing out of the zone. It's so many of those things that aren't necessarily exciting parts of the game, but are very necessary. And they're gone. That bottom six now is a shell of what it used to be 6 months ago. So a lot of that, I think, starts from there, and it just builds into that. And then you're also having, I think, Tyler Myers, his game has slipped a little bit this season. Maybe that initial burst of that boost that he got after the trade is gone, and maybe he's now settling into more of the player that he really is. So, yeah, it's a bad situation right now, and especially when you think that this is a team paying so much money for its blue line to be where they are in terms of goals allowed, and in the sense that your goaltending also hasn't been very bad. Connor Hellebuyck has been pretty solid. Michael Hodgson's game has fallen off considerably, and I think Andre Pavlovich's game is what it's always been, which is to say moments of quality play mixed in with a lot of subpar play. So to sum it all up, it's a mix of issues.
Scott?
Yeah, you talk about the whole Dustin Byfuglien contract situation and all that stuff, and then you look at kind of his defensive body of work, and you look at last night's game on that, I think it was the third goal, where he was just kind of
coasting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he coasted the way back, and the biggest hit he threw was the cross check to the back. I forget who scored there on the
Goudreau.
Goal there.
Yeah.
Goudreau. Trouba's game, not where I guess the Jets would want it to be, I would say. As Pat said, Myers' game, maybe the honeymoon stage is over for him playing at maybe a higher level than he would normally play. So the goaltending, again, it's always been a thing. You can beat that dead horse all day long. The Jets aren't good in that spot. I mean, Hellebuck's been good. Mm-hmm. Michael Hutchinson was very good last year for a long time. How long is Hellebuyck going to be this good for? Will he slip? Like Hutchinson has this year, and when will that happen, throughout the year? At this point, the Jets they statistically have one of their worst season in terms of different totals, power play, penalty kill, points at this point. Christmas, I did a bunch of number crunching in the office today. And they're not around right now, it seems, and they're not playing at the level they were last year.
Scott, you mentioned Jacob Trouba, and Patrick mentioned Tyler Myers, and I think maybe offensively Tyler Myers hasn't slipped as much, but I think Tobias Enstrom is another player for me who has not been very good defensively. We talked about that when we looked at the Jets at the quarter mark, and Tobias Enstrom actually had one of the highest plus-minuses on the team, but we know that that's a flawed stat. But and it's not just the goal that he tipped in, the first Johnny Gaudreau goal yesterday. I mean, he's struggled, and I don't think it's a coincidence that Jacob Trouba has now been paired up with Dustin Byfuglien. Trouba, of course, now playing on the left side. I don't think it's a coincidence that Trouba is playing the best hockey of the season. But I think it's undeniable that he has not been the same player as he was last year. And I think the same can be said for Mark Stewart. And you guys know I'm a big Stu fan, and the same can be said for Ben Chiarot. I mean, it's a collective effort here. It's not like one player on the defense has had a below-average year based on the standards that they set last year. I think it's a group because it's the same six defensemen. And I think you're starting to see certain players play better. Buff certainly didn't have his best game defensively, and he's been, you know, kind of spotty as far as his defensive play, and he has been, you know, off and on throughout his time in Winnipeg. But I think with Jacob Trouba, I mean, last year you saw the makings of an elite defenseman, and we've only seen flashes of that, Richie, this year. So I think it's a, as a whole, and the goaltending, I agree with Patrick. I mean, Hellebuck's been great, and Hutchinson wasn't the reason why they lost yesterday. I mean, one of the goals went off his head, and there was an empty netter, and Pavlik has been okay, but I don't think the goaltending has really been the difference. I think you're just having a kind of collective, you know, subpar performance by all of these individuals on the back end.
See, I think it's more team. I don't have as much of a problem with, say, like Enstrom and Myers, and, you know, obviously Trouba has struggled in terms of my expectations for him. The other guys kind of fall in line overall with what I expected. The issue to me is, you talk about the youth before and putting too many young players in the lineup. Young players aren't generally good at playing defense. I mean, there's a lot of different reads, and they have to be more disciplined, and they're used to cheating. I mean, Ehlers is used to cheating in the QMJHL. And that's just the way it is. And it takes time to adjust. So you have veteran players being replaced with young players who are learning the game at the same time. Even Adam Lowry, before he was sent down, learning the game still. I mean, in his second season in the National Hockey League, Burmistrov hadn't been back in two seasons. And Andrew Kopp, all these guys are learning. And what happens is sometimes the coach is relying too much on the top two lines to produce offense. What you're doing is either you're creating offense at the expense of defense, or you're not really playing your bottom guys maybe as much as you want to, or you're playing them and they're not creating anything for you. And there's so many problems that exist there. So I think what you have is youth movement that costs you on the back end. And maybe there's a fair amount of skill as part of that youth movement.
Let me ask you this, Richard. How different is this team's defensive mindset this season so far? How different is it from the team that Claude Noel coached and that he ended up getting fired? Part of the reason why is the team had no defensive mindset with him.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough, Drew. I mean, the teams that Paul Maurice has had have been more talented,
sure, you know,
recently at least, in my mind, in terms of on paper. But I think you're trying to infuse the lineup with different players and different style players. I mean, if you look at the end-of-season roster, we talk about Frolik, you know, being a responsible defensive player and can play in different roles and provides you with depth throughout the roster. You have that. And you have a guy like Jim Slater, you know what you're getting. He's strong, he can defend along the boards, he can take faceoffs. Now, he didn't play a ton or anything like that, but you put different guys into different roles. Stepniak, you just know what you're getting. And even before, in the Kane trade, well, there's a value defensively to putting the puck in the corner and having Evander Kane chase it and smoke a guy along the boards and pressure him with his speed. I mean, there are values to that, and playing a more simple game at times. Like Bogosian didn't always make the right play you want him to make, but he'd fire the puck in along the boards, you get in a forecheck, or you at least be in a good defensive position. Myers gives you more offense. That comes with a little bit more risk. Like Ehlers comes with more risk, but gives you more offense. And you saw Paul Maurice spoke about it early in the season, creating offense at the expense of defense.
And I think, sorry to butt in here, but I think you've seen that.
No, we want you to butt in. That's what this is all about.
Fair enough. I think you've seen that this year, where there is that give and take with defensive play versus offensive play. And, you know, last year at this time, there was 83 goals against for the Jets, which was, compared to this year, there's a 21-goal difference on the wrong side there. They've allowed 104 goals this year now through, you know, the same stretch of time at the Christmas break here. And so, yeah, when you have Myers, yeah, he scored, I think, was it 4 or 5 goals now this year. But how much does that give way to him, you know, being back in his defensive role when he needs to be, right? You know, there was a few games probably a month and a half ago where there's 3 or 4 games in a row, just like odd man rush, 2-on-1, 3-on-1. Like, what was going on there? Like, and maybe they are trying to, and they have 9 more goals or 11 more goals right now than they did at this point last year. But, I mean, it's still a nine goal difference to a 21-goal difference.
And, and I'm sure Patrick wants to get in here, and Izzy, too. Sure. But, you know, on that point, as Scott talks about, your defense joins the rush. I know Bufflin's got a lot of goals on the power play, or points on the power play, but you want him to join the rush, the defense to join the rush, probably partially because they're very mobile and can create offense, partially because your third and fourth lines can't create any offense. So then you're creating odd man chances to create offense from a strength, but then it's becoming a weakness.
Patrick, you wanted to get in on this?
Yeah, to me, again, it all comes back to a lack of depth here. It's like Rich just said,
when you only really your first two lines are producing, that forces you to cheat in all different areas of your game, and it forces those players to take chances that probably they shouldn't be taking. And it's kind of a domino effect that one thing leads to another. And when you have all 20 players kind of pulling in different directions and not playing cohesively, that house of cards that can topple over really quickly. So it's a situation where the bottom six should be something that's pretty easy to correct. And what I've seen for the first 4+ seasons here is, other than the month and a half last season, the bottom six has remained a major issue through that entire time. And it's now bleeding over into the other parts of the team, into the top six, into the top four defensemen. And when you have that, all bets are off, and now you have a player like Dustin Byfuglien or Tyler Myers having to, or feeling a sense that they have to take some chances that they don't need to be taking otherwise. And the Jets are a team with a very slim margin of error in the best of times. So when they have to start taking chances, it doesn't take much for that whole house of cards to start tumbling down.
Ezzy, quickly, and then we'll have to go to break.
And I think it should be noted, guys, that, I mean, last year you had such solid, consistent D pairings, and we just haven't had that compared to last year. Ben Chiarot and Dustin Byfuglien, Ben Chiarot in his rookie season, I mean, they were just, they had chemistry and they worked. Jacob Trouba and Mark Stewart, I mean, they've been a pair since Jacob Trouba came into the league. Tyler Myers and Tobias Enstrom, sure, they're still together now, and they are continuing to have that chemistry, but it's just been the last couple of weeks that we've seen Jacob Trouba and Dustin Byfuglien, with Trouba moving over to the left side. So I think that has also had an impact on the defense. And when they've put in Adam Pardy or Paul Postma, it's really been in with spot duty. It's been for a very short-term amount of time. So I think that has also impacted the defense. But it goes back to what I said before, and I feel strongly about that. I don't think Tobias Enstrom has been good this year. I don't think that Jacob Trouba has been as good as he was last year. And I think those are two guys in your top four that need to be better. They have a combined 3 goals. It's not good enough.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look forward to 2016 and see what the Jets can salvage from this season. You're listening to NHL This Week. Our 2015 Winnipeg Jets Year in Review Roundtable continues on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Our 2015 Winnipeg Jets Year in Review Roundtable continues. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside my colleagues with the Legal Curve, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us, and Patrick Williams of NHL.com joins us on the phone line from Toronto. Patrick, 2016 is in 9 days from today. If you're a Winnipeg Jets fan, what are you looking for in the remainder of this 2015-16 Winnipeg Jets season? I mean, right now the Jets are dead last in the Central Division. Are you prepared to say that it's sort of a lost cause going forward for the remainder of this year?
Well, yeah. If I was a Winnipeg Jets fan, I would say that it's less about trying to salvage this season and more about trying to set yourself up for next season and beyond. So for me, that starts with getting a resolution to this Ladd and Byfuglien situation ASAP. Every day that you wait to get a resolution there, if you're going to trade them, is a day where their value falls a little bit more. And if you let it come down to the trade deadline, all sorts of things can happen there, and the market's very volatile at that time, and you run the risk of either not getting much of a return or perhaps not being able to pull off a deal at all. And then from that point, a player is in complete control of the situation, and he will probably choose to go to free agency. And at that point, as we saw with Michael Frolik this past summer, all bets are off, and it's not exactly a situation where you can expect to bring that player back. So first and foremost, figure out your plan long term, because what you do now is going to set yourself up for well beyond this season. This season is pretty much a write-off at this point.
Scott?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to echo Pat's comments. He's already said them, but I mean, the reality of the situation here is the Jets are 3 points out of the basement of the league, and they're a lot further away from a playoff spot in the toughest division in the NHL. So that's the reality. And now, to say that they're going to go, I mean, I think they have to go 700.
Yeah.
To hit 100 points. They hit 99 last year. It got them into a playoff spot. 100, we don't know what it'll be. Maybe a little too early to tell, but it'll be around that mark. And the Jets have to win 34 games to get 68 points right now to get them to 100, or in whatever mixed mm-hmm. match of points there. So like Patrick said, I mean, if this season is a write-off, I mean, it's time to do something with Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien. And if it's a lost season, and these guys, you know, aren't going to sign and they're not in your financial plans and that sort of thing, it's time to start actively shopping these guys and get what you can for them now before, like Patrick said, you know, they have all the power and you just lose them like you lost Frölich, just like Pat said. So
right, and if you want to break it up into those two parts, it's what the Jets are going to do for the rest of the regular season and then what they're going to do with Ladd and Byfuglien. And both of them are kind of interrelated, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Ladd and Byfuglien, we probably thought that Ladd was going to be signed already. We talked about this during the second segment, and then Byfuglien we weren't as sure about. But, you know, Scott mentions, you know, the 99-point mark, which they reached last year. Even if you're going to be conservative and say that the Jets only are going to need 95 points, well, they're still going to have to go 29, 14, and 5 or something like that, right? Which is around 700%. Pardon me, 70%.
Yeah. 700% would be a great winning percentage.
Yeah, that would be really good. I don't think that's ever happened in any professional sport. But, I mean, this is the reality. And we've been talking about this for 3 or 4 weeks now, that because of the way the Jets played in November, Drew, they had to get on a run here. They had to win 4, 5, 6 mm-hmm. games in a row to make up for that terrible November where they only won, what was it, 4 of 14 games?
You know, Rich, let me ask you this. How do you explain that this Winnipeg Jets team started the season so well and we're going along swimmingly until that Sunday night game in Montreal, and since then they've absolutely fallen off of a cliff?
Part of it, your goaltending is going to come back to earth. Part of it is, again, the young players and the fact they're going to go through struggles. Part of it is you can't stay out of the penalty box. I mean, it's not one thing. I mean, these are the three main things. I think overall...
And the special teams have sucked.
Yeah, I mean, it's a blessing for the team, I think, that long-term... I think it's a blessing that they're out of it now, or close to out of it at this point. Why? Because if this team was 2 points in the playoffs, come up to the trade deadline, what are they going to do? Trade the two guys who are integral parts of their roster? And if you're trading guys at the deadline, you're likely not trading them to teams that aren't also going for the cup, so they're not giving you big-time players off their roster, so you're going to then fade off from then? Or are you going to say, okay, let's leave where we are now. We don't have much of a chance. We need to make a decision on these guys. It looks like if it's taken this long, they're probably going to move them, one if not both, and then you can make that decision as opposed to being clouded by the fact that you're right on the playoff edge.
And I think, so if there's a glimmer of hope here for the Jets to kind of turn their season around, you know, as marginal as that might seem, is like Rich said, you got to first of all stay out of the box, and secondly, you got to get better on the power play. And they're awful. I mean, there's not really a better way to put it right now. They're 0 for 13 on the road. In December, they're 3 for 42 on the road since November 1st. Like, they're not very good on the power play there. They have one of the worst PKs in the league. It's 27th, I think, right now. They have the second worst power play in the league. So there's a lot of things that need to turn around very quickly for the Jets if they want to turn this season around. I'm just not sure it's possible.
Just one thing, Ezzy, I know you want to get in here, and I'm sure Patrick wants to get in here. It's a good point by Scott. And my comment on the power play would be this. The power play in day one in 2011, October 2011, had all the same parts except for Matthew Perreault. So how much of a change do you expect if the power play continually is around the same range?
Yeah, and Scott put those numbers together and he tweeted them out. I mean, it's pretty atrocious that the Jets are 27th in the PK right now and 29th on the power play. And the power play hasn't really been good, with the exception of the first year and last year when they kind of climbed up slowly to 20th, I think it was. And, you know, and this is a good question for Patrick as well. I mean, how do you expect that to change with the personnel? And at one point, is the coaching staff going to be held accountable for this?
Patrick, the last word on this goes to you. You know, give a glimmer of hope for Winnipeg Jets fans for 2016.
Well, I'm less about hope and more about trying to
be realistic.
That's fine, too.
But I'll say hope will be for Jets fans if, as was said earlier, that if this is finally what pushes the Jets into real, true, decisive action, then I think that maybe a year or two from now, everybody will look back at this time and it will be a blip on the radar and people look back at it as something that had to happen in order to get somewhere. But that's only if that happens, and I remain skeptical that it will.
Hope could also come in the form of Austin Matthews, the projected 2016
Let's
first
Let's not get out of control here, Drew.
You would.
Yeah, you know, I gotta say that. Patrick Williams of NHL.com, he joined us on the phone line. Scott Bilk of the Winnipeg Free Press. Gentlemen, I really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us for this year-in-review roundtable, and we'll do it again when the 2015-16 NHL season, Winnipeg Jets season, comes to an end in a couple months.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. This was awesome.
Thanks, Patrick.
Merry Christmas, guys.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to everybody.
Take care.
The second hour of NHL this week, we'll open up the phone lines to you. You get your opinions in as well. 780-1290. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Second hour of NHL This Week. The phone lines are open, 780-1290. We're looking back at the year 2015 from a Winnipeg Jets perspective, looking ahead to 2016 as well.
Time to air your grievances, just like they were doing on Hustler and Lawless.
That's right. It is Festivus, so you can air your grievances as well.
I have a grievance quickly.
Yeah.
And Scott mentioned it earlier, and I really enjoy watching Dustin Bufflin play, and I think he's a very good defenseman. And so I think highly of his game. But I mean, last night
that back check,
I watched it, replayed it a few times. I replayed that offside too, and that was onside, by the way, the Goudreau play, which is probably why they didn't challenge it, of course. And, you know, Shifley gets beat there, fine. But Bufflin after the right, I looked at it, I slowed it down. Bufflin after the red line, between the red line and the blue line. Mm-hmm. He didn't take one stride into the net. He did not take one stride. And I looked at the shift length, too. Is he on for 3 minutes, 2 minutes? He's on for 54 seconds. So, I mean, he's certainly what he's on, an Edmonton game, on for like 3 minutes in a row at the end of the game to create offense. I realize he's more stationary there. But you're down, you're up, you're down 2-1. It's a huge game. A sure. team that's competing for a spot. I mean, they're all big games, but a team that's competing for a spot. You give it a stride and a half, you probably at least slash him and possibly, you know, take away a chance and even get a penalty. It's better than the result that it was. So I just was like, come on. I mean, that to me is something that can be corrected, because that's an effort thing.
Yeah.
And again, I know that happens a lot in games. You'll see, you know, you could say about Brian Little the night before, one more stride back, he could have intercepted the pass from Draisaitl to Purcell. So I'm not just picking on Bufflin. Just that play last night, I was thinking to myself, you know, if you're a Jets fan there, and that game means so much, you got to give it that extra bit.
It was that noticeable. I mean, it really was noticeable that, you know, if he does take that one stride.
And I appreciate if Shifley plays that better, you don't even talk
sure,
about it.
Of course. I mean, and it's a great play by Goudreau.
I mean, he's a great player.
He's a fantastic player. But I think your grievance there on this Festivus night is a valid one. 780-1290. Looking back at 2015 for the Winnipeg Jets, what sticks out to you the most? Looking ahead to 2016, what do you want Santa to bring you under the tree for the Winnipeg Jets for 2016?
You're still here.
780-1290. That's what you want. You wanted Santa to get rid of me? That's what you wanted for Christmas there, Richard?
No, you know what? I mean, I agree with Richie that, you know, that wasn't Buff's best effort on the Johnny Gaudreau goal last night. I said Johnny Gaudreau goal. But my grievance is, you know, I brought some Tahiti treat in the studio. You can't get that in Canada. I brought that in. Richie brought some French fries in the studio, and you're not even going to have any, Drew. That's what I'm going to air that grievance right now.
I'm not a huge Tahiti treat guy, because...
How do you not like Tahiti treat? It's delicious.
It's a little sweet for me. But I mean,
you're a sour guy.
I'm a little bit of a sour guy. I prefer.
By the way, I have to give Alex one. I'm gonna, you know what? Alex will have your Tahiti treat.
Alex can have my Tahiti treat. That's certainly possible.
But Rich brought French fries, and Rich made cookies for us here. I mean, what are you bringing to the table, Drew?
Very little, but that's no different than any other week on this program.
I'm giving you a hard time.
I am aware that you're giving me a hard time.
I know we're gonna review the season and stuff. But just quickly on the two games here, You know, the effort on Monday night, and you put in, you get a ton of shots on net. Now you get into a hole, and you're played fairly evenly in the first period, and you're down 2-0.
Hold on, Richie. The Jets could have easily won that game. I mean, Cam Talbot played like Dominic Hasek.
They deserved to win the game. 100%. Oh, right. Yeah, he was great. Yeah, yeah. They deserved to win the game. Don't get me wrong. I mean, a ton of, you know, they had good chances in the first period, but they came out down 2-0 in the first period. So I'm saying is that some of those chances were, you know, the product of, well, a lot of penalties from Edmonton. And the other aspect of that is that you're up, so you're going to try and protect a lead. And Rick pointed out on Monday, you know, not very good at protecting when you're Edmonton. You can't really play a good defensive game. Saying all that, sure, you deserve to win that game. But I thought it was interesting, Paul Maurice, kind of in a positive mood the following morning, talking about liking what he's seeing. And then last night coming on, and Joel Marcoux mentioned it on the post-game show, it's a different tune with Rick, different tune. I mean, you know, I've been hard on this team. A coach has been in a bad mood for a long time. It's like, well, you sold us in the morning, at least you tell us in the morning, that overall you think you're in a good position. And I realize, you know, that's a sales job and all that. But to change a tune so quickly, to me, it looks like a bit of, not resignation necessarily, but a bit of an admittance of where they stand right now.
What do you think of the coaching job that Paul Maurice has done this year?
I mean, people like to blame special teams on the coaching staff. We've seen that before.
Some responsibility.
The coaching staff certainly does not get off here without blame. And don't get me wrong. I don't like. I'll say this though. This is what I would take issue with the coaching staff. If you're going to play the top four defensemen together, you should have done it in training camp. I don't see the lines as they are working right now because you're getting little to nothing from your third and fourth lines. That's my biggest beefs. Otherwise, I mean, special teams. That's some personnel there, I think, as I mentioned last segment, we talked about in the roundtable there. But the players deserve their fair share.
Our roundtable or Rick's roundtable?
Yeah, the players deserve their fair share of blame, and management as well. So the coaches do not get off without shouldering some blame, but I'm certainly not going to say that's the main reason. But it's a contributing factor amongst many.
I think the penalties and the special teams are something that you can't ignore, and we haven't ignored, and they certainly haven't ignored it on H&L. Rick hasn't ignored it. The Big Show, we've all talked about it here in Winnipeg. But it's something that's got to be addressed. And sending Adam Lowry down to the AHL and moving Andrew Ladd to the third line temporarily, I don't think is the long-term fix. And I'm not saying that it's the coaching staff specifically, but I mean, there's an issue here. I mean, they've taken too many penalties now for 2 years, and the PK has been awful, and the power play has been awful, with the exception of maybe last year for the second half of the season. And I agree with Rich. I mean, the personnel hasn't changed that much, but the players you're talking about are pretty good players. I mean, Blake Wheeler, Brian Little, Tobias Enstrom, Tyler Myers, Scheifele Perreault. I mean, these might not be the 1980s Oilers, but it's a pretty good team, and throw in Dustin Byfuglien there, who's probably their best player on the power play. I mean, It's an issue here. They got to fix it, and it's probably too late this year to fix it, which is the unfortunate part. We talked about it. That November might have cost the Jets a playoff spot.
Well, the December certainly hasn't done that much more either, but it is really amazing how quickly this season has just turned. As I mentioned, you know, back during when we were having the roundtable with Scott and Patrick, you know, things were going swimmingly to start the year, and sure, a lot of that was the goaltending, and that, you know, covered up a lot of warts. But, you know, here it is, December 23rd. There's been seasons where the Jets have struggled, certainly in their, you know, the first couple of years. There's been seasons where it doesn't look good for a playoff spot, but I think this is the season that the most hopelessness has set in this early in the year for this team.
You talk about, I mean, Calgary's, to me, a bit of an anomaly in terms of goals against, and goaltending is a factor there because they have a really good defense. If you look at some of the teams that have allowed 104 goals, like the Jets have, you know, Edmonton, whose defense certainly pretty weak. Ottawa, whose defense you think would be better but really isn't. Carolina, who's got a developing defense, 101 goals. Columbus, who's not strong on defense. Arizona doesn't have the depth. The issue I'd have is the Jets, talent-wise and money-wise, have locked a lot of money into their defense.
Sure.
So you sure as heck want to be able to defend and not just blame it on the defense, its team and its goaltending, but if you're going to lock a lot of money into your defense, you don't want to be a team that allows 104 goals, put it simply.
Well, you know, you mentioned a team that has a lot of money locked into defense. Another team that has a lot of money locked into defense is the Minnesota Wild. They just signed Jared Spurgeon to an extension this week. You look at the Wild's
defense.
They don't
have Ryan Suter on this team, Drew.
I know they don't have Ryan Suter on this team. And I know he's that impactful.
He is.
But, I mean, you know, it's not. I'm not saying the Jets would be third, or they would have 80 goals against like the Wild do, and third in the overall in the NHL. But they should be better than, you know, 26th.
Oh, absolutely. I don't.
Yes.
Think, I don't
oh,
think
that.
Yeah, Richie, sorry, I was just going to say, I don't think anybody thought that the Jets' defense was going to struggle like this. I don't think any of us certainly did. And I think you've seen players like Tobias Enstrom and Jacob Trouba struggle. I think Buff has been more consistent. I think we've gotten what we've expected out of Buff and Myers and Stewart, and I would say Sherrod has also struggled. But I don't know.
Are you counting on Enstrom, Bufflin, or Myers to be locked down defensemen?
No, and that's an issue.
But then you're not really paying them to be locked down defensemen. The only guy you're really, really, I think, relying on to be a lockdown defenseman as he would be Trouba. And you're not even paying him to be that yet because he's on an entry-level deal.
And so, next year will be that, yeah.
But isn't that, you know?
It's an issue.
Phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. 780-1290. Looking back at the year 2015 for the Winnipeg Jets, looking ahead to 2016, what do you want to see Santa leave under your Winnipeg Jets Christmas tree? Mark, welcome to NHL This Week. What do you think about your Winnipeg Jets thus far this year?
I'd like to ask the panel, with a shrinking Canadian dollar, and the TV and radio contract, will the Jets be around, or will they be on the auction block? And I don't know if any of you gentlemen were around when the late Hal Sigurdsson wrote this column. There's a difference between an NHL franchise and a franchise in the NHL. How stable are the Winnipeg Jets compared, for instance, with the Ottawa Senators, who supposedly don't have a waiting list, unless all their games are sold out? You can get tickets for ten bucks. So I'd like to hear your reaction.
Mark, appreciate the call. Thanks for listening to NHL This Week. Guys, I'll let you know, the stability of the franchise, I mean, I think there's a printing press at the bottom of the MTS Center that's still running pretty well.
Well, they're making a lot of money.
Yeah, and by the way, hopefully the dollar doesn't go too low, because both of you guys are going to the U.S. coming up here in a few days. But, you know, I think it's a really good question by Mark, by the way. And we're starting to hear possibly the dollar going to 60 cents. But I think there's a big difference between the Jets 2.0 and the Jets 1.0, you know, Barry Shankro and all that. I mean, the ownership obviously has much deeper pockets with David Thompson. But you're talking about an economic climate, and with a larger Canadian TV deal and the team owning the arena.
Which is in, by the way, Canadian dollars.
Right. And the season ticket base, Drew, the Winnipeg Jets 1.0 did not have anywhere near 13,000 season ticket holders when they left. So I think it's a valid question, but I don't think that the Winnipeg Jets are in any type of trouble if the dollar goes down. They plan for that. If anything, the 60 cent dollar really affects the salary cap, and it won't go up as much as it would have, Richie, if the Canadian dollar was at 85-90 cents. But as far as the Winnipeg Jets go, I mean, they've got a huge season ticket base, they've got an NHL regional contract with TSN, and then you've got a massive national TV deal. So the Jets are stable right now, but it's certainly not going to be something that the owners are going to like, because everything is in Canadian dollars when it comes to the Canadian team. So it's not good to have a Canadian dollar, put it that way.
No,
that's low, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, that's out of the control of, obviously, the Canadian NHL owners.
And you don't know how much they hedged when it was a dollar or close to it.
They said they did. I mean, I have no concerns.
I mean, I'm sure they've lost money, Drew. I think we can say it pretty confidently. They've lost money as a result of the dollar tanking, like all Canadian teams have done.
They're not making, instead of saying lost money, they're not making as much money if the Canadian dollar was at the 85-90 cent mark, though it was a couple years ago.
And that's one of the reasons why the Toronto Maple Leafs aren't the most, don't have the highest value amongst NHL teams. That's partly the reason.
Sure, that and the fact they haven't made the playoffs in the last four decades.
It's a good question by Mark, though, about the stability. And I mean, the Jets are the lowest up against the cap, and the lowest team in spending in terms of cap room now. So I'm assuming that is a factor in terms of how the money is allotted.
Let's head to break. The phone lines are open, 780-1290. Looking back at the year 2015 for the Winnipeg Jets, looking ahead to 2016, what would you like to see Santa bring Winnipeg Jets fans under the Christmas tree?
An Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien contract.
That's possibly one of the things that fans would like to see from Santa. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Which one of you guys is the American idiot? Nothing? Nobody?
Drew, there's too many jokes there.
Okay. Illegal Curve Hockey is thrilled to be participating in the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life coming up on June the 5th, 2016. Join IC in raising money for the Riverview Health Center Foundation's Alzheimer and Dementia Wards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca.
I'm just an idiot, Drew. I'm not an American idiot, yeah. So I guess if you want to call me a Canadian idiot, whatever.
Sure. 780-1290. The phone lines are open here on the program as we are looking back at the Winnipeg Jets season in 2015, looking ahead to 2016 and what you would like to see the Jets get under the Christmas tree. See how I did that? See how that rhymed there?
It was a nice little rhyme.
Thank you. I'm a poet and I didn't even know it. Anyways.
Yeah, that was also a rhyme.
That was just bad. That was bad.
Yeah, Drew.
A nice tweet coming in about the Tahiti treat you were talking about earlier from Med Shop Osborne.
Nice of there to be a nice tweet about Tahiti treat, a canned drink.
Yeah. At Illegal Curve, yeah. Nothing pairs better than with Tahiti treat than Old Dutch Mexican chili chips.
Oh, yeah.
Takes him back to Saturday morning at the rink in 1991.
This guy knows what he's talking about. By the way, this Tahiti treat is courtesy of our buddy Matthew Frost at City Hall. And this Tahiti treat is really difficult to get. Last time I went down to Grand Forks and was at the Target in Grand Forks. I was looking around for half an hour. I couldn't find any. I had to go all the way up to, I forget where I went. I went to a small little town, found a little Tahiti treat. But it's definitely a delicious beverage that I wish they sold in Canada.
Let's get back to the phone lines. Cam wants to talk about the power play. Cam, good evening and welcome to NHL This Week.
Does Cam like Tahiti treat?
Cam, do you like Tahiti treat?
Yeah, they're not bad.
Okay, good.
Merry Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas to
Merry
you
Christmas,
too,
Cam.
Yeah, I want to talk about the power play. Like, it's been for 5 years really bad. I mean, on its best years, it's been average at best.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the way I look at the Jets with their personnel, like, on their team, they really don't have many really good shooters.
Uh-huh.
Like they missed the net as much as probably any team in the league. But I find, like, the guys that are on their team, they don't have quick releases in most cases. As you'll hear Dennis Beck with his tease it up, his phrase all the time. Like they don't have good one-time shooters and things like that. And they never seem to have a guy, like most teams, to screen the goalie. And like some teams, like Philadelphia, will use two guys. Like they'll have one guy right in the goalie's mm-hmm. grill and one guy 10 feet in front of him. And like I think the Jets, either the personnel is they're going to have to change it or make a trade to get someone to play on a power play that will stand in front of the net. Like Blake Wheeler will do it sometimes. Ladd's usually 10, 15 feet in front of the net. And I think if they had someone, like the goalies are too good or the pads are too big to beat them if they can see the shot.
Cam, really appreciate the call.
Keep him on. Keep Cam on for a second. I think this is a...
What are you cutting Cam off for, Drew?
This is a good point, Cam. I think you saw that a lot, and I think you're absolutely right, especially in terms of the one-timers. You know, you watch the puck on the rotation on that power play, and if it's not going through Dustin Byfuglien at the top, especially on the first unit at the top of the blue line there, then there really isn't that one-timer that you need, or at least a lot of teams are able to get success from. So, for example, I even saw in the 4-on-3 against Edmonton, that puck was coming around to Little. He usually stops it and quickly shoots it. Or if he had the one-timer, he missed the net a little bit high. That's a huge thing. So teams don't have to play over to take away that shot. If you know, or for Enstrom, for example, who always will hold it for a second or adjust his stick, if you know you have a split second to make that adjustment, it gives the penalty killers that much more room for their stick or for that stride to be able to get in the way.
Let me ask you guys this, though. How many teams in the league have that one-timer trigger man, the Alex Ovechkin or the Steven Stamkos, that you know that can just rifle it off without having to let it even settle it on its stick? That
well, I mean, there's a few teams that have it, Drew. I mean, you can look at Dallas having it with Sagan.
Sure,
he can light it up.
Montreal, Subban.
I mean, Subban and Byfuglien are both going to be at the top. Well, I mean, they'll do sometimes backdoor with Markov. It would just depend, but I think Cam's point is well taken in terms of, and he talks about the front of the net. Maybe because of the lack of that shot there, maybe you're talking about formatting changes. I don't know. But it's kind of like how many more times can they change the format because it's the same players.
The power play has definitely gotten stale, to Cam's point. I mean, Dustin Byfuglien, Blake Wheeler, Brian Little, Mark Scheifele's got a quick release. Those are your best shots, and obviously the one-timer to Dustin Byfuglien is something that the Jets have been doing since they came over from Atlanta. But I think that there is a little bit of predictability there. But I also think that, you know, and back to the Matthew Perreault conversation we had earlier, and he's been great on the second line. Perreault was brought in mm-hmm. 2 years ago, yeah. and he's been good on the power
yeah,
play.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, he's not Alex Ovechkin, he's not Steven Stamkos, but Matthew Perreault's got a good quick release wrist shot. So I do think that the personnel maybe needs to be looked at, but I also think there's some schemes that could be changed a little bit. And, you know, I think, you know, Cam was right. Sometimes the Jets don't have enough of a net front presence. But again, guys, I don't think that this team should be bottom three in the NHL in power play. They can be better than that.
780-1290 is the phone line. We're looking back at the Winnipeg Jets 2015. We're looking, you know, currently, how do you see the team? And we're looking ahead to 2016 as well. And this, you can mark it down in history, is the exact moment that this show completely and totally jumped the shark. Buck is on the line, and he wants to talk about the Ezzy Awards. Buck, welcome to the program. May God have mercy on your soul and all of our souls.
Attaboy, Buck.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks to, you know, first-time caller, long-time listener. Buck Naked here from Beaverbrook. Just wanted to say, question for the Ezzies. Do you guys, Ezzy, do you guys foresee which goalie from the Winnipeg Jets is going to receive the Outstanding Goalie of the Year Award? And second part question, sorry, which Lille Curve analyst is going to receive the IC Analyst of the Year Award?
Buck, really appreciate the call. I beg you to find something better to do than worry about the Ezzies. But
by the way, the Ezzies,
Ezzy, when are the Ezzies?
The Ezzies are going to take place this Saturday.
What are the Ezzies is the first question, Drew.
I assume most people knew what the Ezzies were.
Yeah.
The Ezzies, unfortunately, exist as they are the made-up award ceremony that Ezra created, where he hands out various random awards to random people on
Twitter.
You've
won an Ezzy.
I've won multiple Ezzys.
What are you complaining about?
I'm not complaining in the least, but I'm astounded.
You're being a little negative.
No. I'm astounded. First of all, my favorite part about Twitter is I'll be randomly looking at some random person's Twitter profile, and it'll actually say in their bio.
Oh, that's pretty creepy, Drew.
Well, sometimes you look to see, you know, somebody tweets at you. You look to see what they say.
Quite the admission.
Well,
on
Drew, let me explain the Ezzies. Ezzy here.
Let me just finish what I'm saying. My favorite thing is you randomly look at somebody's profile.
I don't like you being the spokesperson for the Ezzies, by the way.
At their description, and it says 3-time Ezzy Award winner, 2012 through 2014.
First off, people love them. There's a Twitter account. It's at the Ezzies. We're going to do them this Saturday, December 26th. It's all in good fun. It's all on Twitter. Gary Lawless is a big fan of the Ezzies. He's going to win an Ezzy this year, just you know, setting everybody up for that. But as far as Buck Naked's question, Drew, you're definitely not winning Analyst of the Year. I can tell you right
Buck
now, Richie's got that. Richie's got that
real?
On lockdown. And as far as Goalie of the Year, I mean, I think Connor Hellebuck has probably got the inside step right now. But anyways, yeah, looking forward to the Ezzies. Always have a good time. People look forward to it. And I know you're going to be out of town, Drew, but hopefully you're going to tune in on your phone.
I'll tune in on my phone. Don't worry. I'll be glad to do that. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to answer Sotch's question.
Okay.
Just sent it in via Twitter. You can do that, too, at Illegal Curve. Sotch's question was, first of all, happy holidays. My question is...
Merry Christmas, Sotch.
If Byfuglien and Ladd walk for nothing, is Kevin Cheveldayoff's job in jeopardy? We'll answer that question next. You're
serious
listening
question.
To NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as the world's best jersey customizer. Keener's knowledge of jerseys is unsurpassed. If you want awesome jerseys for your team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or find them on your next opponent. You guys see the jerseys at the Wild are going to wear for their stadium series game?
Awesome.
Yeah, the
awesome
old school North Stars jerseys is what they're going to wear.
Very cool.
Yeah, it looked like it's a sharp jersey.
Awesome.
Yeah. So the question before the break came courtesy of our friend Sotch, well known to the Twitterverse. He might be up for an Ezzy coming up on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Right. Sauch has won an Ezzy before.
Yeah, I'm sure he has. 780-1290. You can also get in. We want to hear from you, or you tweet at us at Illegal Curve. The question Sauch asked was, if Buff and Ladd walk for nothing, is Kevin Sheveldayoff's job in jeopardy? Start with you, Richie.
Is it in jeopardy, or should it be in jeopardy? I mean, is it in jeopardy? You'd think it'd probably have to be. Should it be in jeopardy if that were to happen? Yes, of course. I mean, if you're not doing that, if you're not taking care of that, then what are you doing?
Sure.
Because in reality, you're not involved in the draft after the first round. If you're even that involved in the first round, you trust your scouts, and he's done a great job of that. It's part of that, allowing your scouts to do their work is allowing them to do their work and not overstepping your bounds, okay? But if you're not handling the roster players and dealing with it in one way or another, then what are you doing? So, I mean, I think it'll be dealt with. It has to be dealt with. There's no alternative. And the fact that the Jets have fallen out of it here by such a wide margin allows for them to make a move without the risk of falling, you know, falling out of the playoffs from in it, or not staying competitive when you're close to the playoffs and all that. So I don't think that happens. But yeah, if your general manager doesn't take care of pending UFAs of high value, then you need to look elsewhere.
I think it's a good question from Sauch. Sauch always has good questions. I think that if the Jets lose one of Ladd or Bufflin, I think Chevy's job could possibly be in jeopardy.
Lose them for nothing, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
You can't have a situation, but, you know, like Zach Parise in New Jersey when they lost him for nothing. You can't have
Ryan
that.
Ryan Suter in Nashville.
Hold on. I agree with that.
I think
Devils
that's
at least went to the finals that year.
Yes, but yeah. I think that's similar, and it's actually, you know, both left wingers, and Richie actually used Zach Parise for a comparable for Andrew Ladd. You can't have that situation. The Jets don't have enough depth to withstand that type of loss. You have to get something for one of these players. That is if they don't sign, of course. I still think Andrew Ladd's going to sign, and I'm not so sure about Dustin Bufflin, even though I do think they should sign Dustin Bufflin. I think he's more of an uncertainty as far as how the Jets management think. Not for me, but I think for the management. So I do think that his job could be in jeopardy. And I'm not going to say if we're talking about this in a couple months that, oh yeah, his job is absolutely in jeopardy, because Kevin Sheveldayoff does have 2 years left on his contract after this year, and I think you could say he's done a lot of good things as far as stockpiling the cupboard with draft picks and the Evander Kane trade, the handling of the Evander Kane trade. But ultimately, guys, the hockey business, like other businesses, is based on results. And the Jets, if they don't make the playoffs this year, they will have made the playoffs once in 5 years. And you could make the argument, certainly,
not won a game,
won a game. And you could make the argument that the Jets aren't going to be that much better set up for next year to make the playoffs, especially if they aren't able to sign one of Ladd or Bufflin. Sure, they're going to be players in the free agent market. I expect the Jets to be much more active this year because they didn't do much at all aside from bringing in Alexander Burmistrov. So
yeah, but how active do you really expect the Jets ever to be in the free agent market?
Well, especially if they lose Ladd or Bufflin, they're going to be active.
Well, but they're always going to be active for second tier free agents. I mean,
they've got the cap room.
How many years ago?
Yeah, but I mean they.
With all due respect, I love Winnipeg and I live here, but you know, Jeff O'Neill on the TSN hockey panel, what was it, 2 years ago, said that free agents don't want to come here, and he got
money talks, Drew, but I mean, you have to overpay probably,
sure,
or at least
he got flack for it then, but I don't think he was wrong. I didn't think he was wrong then. I don't think he's wrong now. Most free agents aren't going to look at Winnipeg as their destination.
Right, but that argument...
Are there any free agents that are available? And remember, everybody's signing long-term deals. There are these young players.
But right, and I didn't necessarily mean that the Jets are going to get Steven Stamkos or Andrei Kopitar. I just meant that they're going to be more active if they lose one of these guys. And yeah, sure, Matthew Perreault and Olli Jokinen, these players are, yeah, Drew, you're right. They're second-tier players. The Jets have yet to sign a free agent the caliber of an Andrew Ladd or Dustin Bufflin, certainly. But yeah, sure, I mean, Kevin Sheveldayoff has a lot of work to do here, and that's not to mention the contracts that are upcoming with Mark Scheifele and Jacob mm-hmm. Trouba, right? Mm-hmm. So, and he's got a decision to make on the goaltenders, too, when Andre Pavlik comes back. So, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done between now and the end of the season.
780-1290, we want to hear from you, looking back at the 2015 Winnipeg Jets season, looking ahead to 2016, what do you want to see the Jets get under the Christmas tree from Santa? an improved record would be a start, but it's hard to say if that's going to come to fruition. I mean, the big tweet that was going around yesterday, the big news that was going around yesterday as the Jets were defeated mm-hmm. by the Edmonton Oilers, is that the Jets over the last 20 games are the worst team in the NHL. There's nobody worse than the Winnipeg Jets over the last 20 games.
Well, Drew,
it's hard to sugarcoat that at all.
The Jets won 7 games in October, and they've won 7 games since then.
It's really crazy. Yeah. I mean,
that's not good enough. And we talked about this last week on the Saturday show. They haven't been getting those loser points as well. They've only gotten 2 mm-hmm. overtime or shootout losses, right? So they just don't have enough points right now. They're 8 points behind Nashville for that last wild card spot, right? So they've got to go on a streak here. With the losses in Alberta, it's almost making it a necessity that you're going to have to beat Pittsburgh, beat Detroit, and beat Arizona, or you're just going to continue to be around the high 500 mark.
Well, I mean,
again, I keep saying this is a blessing.
It's a blessing for Kevin Cheveldayoff, privately and quietly, sure, because it makes your job, makes your decision easier.
I don't know if it does, though.
Well, I mean, what really? Like, at this point in time, you're not going to load up and try and make a run. So then you're going to have to make a move either by signing the guys or moving them.
But I think they had to do that anyways, though.
Yeah, but I just don't know if they would have been able to if they were 3 points up on 2 teams chasing them in the playoffs on February 29th. I mean, anything's possible. Still, you know, yeah. But
you're 9 weeks away. The trade deadline is 9 weeks away.
It's not that far away.
Monday, February the 29th. I mean, you've waited 6 months since we thought something was going to happen. Nothing's happened. I mean, you're down to the nitty-gritty. This is the end. Something's mm-hmm. got to give one way or the other. 780-1290. You can give us a shout. A lot of people chiming in on Twitter. Here's a question from Warren via mm-hmm. Twitter. Jets supposedly kicking the tires on Ryan Johansson. Do you see any viable scenario involving Ladd or Buff or someone else with regard to Ryan mm-hmm. Johansson?
I mean, I think if you're kicking the tires on him, and there's no issue with it, he's a very talented young center and would certainly give them a ton of depth up the middle and skill up the middle, but that would be a big-time defenseman. So, I mean, you're not getting in the Ryan Johansson conversation unless you're talking about Trouba or Myers.
Yep.
That's what you're starting with.
Right.
And, again, you may not like starting with that, but that's what it's going to start with. So if you're going to lose Byfuglien, if you're going to sign Byfuglien, maybe one of those guys does become expendable for a guy like Ryan Johansson. Although I don't know attitude-wise if he's going to be a guy that they want to acquire. But that idea, right? It's a similar thing to this old Travis Hamonic rumors that we heard a while back. If Byfuglien's not going to be in Winnipeg, that changes what you want to do with, say, a guy like Tyler Myers. Because if he's your offensive defenseman and then you're trading him and you're losing Byfuglien, well, then you just went from dynamic offensive ability on the right side to Trouba and Hamonic, modest offensive defenseman, but not of the same caliber. So you have to, there's not in a vacuum here.
I think Ryan Johansson's a really good player. At 71 points last year, and mm-hmm. a couple of years ago he had 33 goals. I don't know if he's a good fit for the Jets, though, and I think there's a few reasons for that.
They went through a situation with a guy from Vancouver who's got bad attitude problems already.
Let's be honest. Ryan Johansson has been a healthy scratch in the NHL. He's been a healthy scratch in junior. He mm-hmm. was sent down to the AHL. This is a few years back. That contract dispute that he had with the Blue Jackets and Jarmo Kekalainen, that didn't leave a good taste in their mouth. And I mean, you're talking about a situation where Brian Little and Mark Scheifele are entrenched as your 1 and 2 centers. Ryan Johansson's not coming here to play wing. He's a center. And I know they've used him as a winger, Richie. But, I mean, how does he fit in? I don't think Scheifele's going to be a third-line center. I don't think that Brian Little's going to be a second or third-line center. Maybe second-line, but I just don't know if it's a fit.
780-1290. Should mention that this segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. If you're still looking to make New Year's Eve plans, Rumors Comedy Club is featuring Sean LeCombe. 2 shows coming up on New Year's Eve, and of course, Dave Coulier from Full House. Originally Full House and the new Netflix show Fuller House. He'll be in town at the end of February. So you can be sure to check that out at rumorscomedyclub.com.
We got to go see that.
We do have to go see that. We will.
We saw him last time.
A lot of great questions coming in via Twitter as well. So at Illegal Curve in addition to 780-1290. Question is, if neither Ladd or Byfuglien are re-signed by the Jets, how far does that set the team back and set the organization back?
depends who they get, Richie. I mean, and again, I agree. You know, I agree that Andrew Ladd is going to sign. I mean, it remains to be seen, but whether it's Andrew Ladd or Dustin Byfuglien or both who don't re-sign, I mean, you have to get some pretty good players back. I don't know if you necessarily get an equal player back if it has to be a package. I would imagine that when you're talking about Ladd or Byfuglien, it's probably going to be a package, right? So you're probably going to have to get a forward and a prospect, a roster forward and a prospect for Ladd, or you're going to have to get a veteran defenseman and a prospect back for Byfuglien, right? So, I mean,
the roster forward, okay, for example, the roster forward won't be as good as Ladd, because why would you trade a guy just as good as Ladd for Ladd?
Right, and in that case, it could really set you back, right? If you don't get a player who can come into your lineup and produce 50, 60 points, right? Ladd is very consistent. You can say whatever you want about his struggles this year. I mean, he's been very consistent for the Winnipeg Jets, and he led them in scoring last year, right? I think that's often, you know, forgotten.
It is, yeah, that's fair.
So,
that's
I mean, you got to get a really good player back for both of these guys. And that's what makes Cheveldayoff's job even harder.
Well, isn't the going rate for, you know, a UFA, or somebody who's about to become a UFA at the trade deadline, isn't the going rate pretty much established now? It's, you know, a roster player and a late first-round pick?
Teams got, yeah, probably true, Drew. Teams got smarter. Teams are getting smarter.
Sure. I mean, nobody's given you, you know, I mean, you look back at, you know, how rare is it to see what the Rangers gave up for Keith Yandel? It's pretty rare. And that wasn't a guy who was a UFA. That was a guy who's got a year left on his contract. And I think throughout the NHL, most people said the Rangers gave up too much.
I would agree.
You know, Duclair, a first-round pick, and there, I think there was even a couple more pieces involved there. I don't remember exactly what it was. So, I mean, if you're expecting that you're going to get, you know, the world in exchange for Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien at the trade deadline or in the next, you know, well, 9 weeks.
That goes back to the draft thing, right? And again, like, I mean, we're still talking about it, but it's true. You go back to the draft and you have every team's theoretically a possibility. And not all, there's some cap issues, but now you're talking about teams' cap. So you're talking about teams that are out of it. They're not interested in Ladd or Byfuglien. So who's out of it? Cross them off the list. Byfuglien, I think, has a 5-team no trade. So cross those teams off the list unless he's going to change his mind on that. And then you have the cap ramifications, teams that can't afford him. Although later in the year, there's going to be more room if you save some money because it's calculated on a per-day basis. It's not as many teams as you think.
Yeah.
It really isn't.
You know, just spitballing here, Richie. You know, if Antoine Vermette is traded last year before the trade deadline to Chicago, which he was, for Klaus Dahlbeck and a first-rounder, I think if you're talking about, for example, a Dustin Byfuglien and you're trading him to the New York Rangers, I mean, for example, I'm just spitballing
here. Sure.
I'm talking about obviously traded to a good team. I think you're talking about asking for a Kevin Hayes and a first rounder back, something like that, or you're maybe asking for, you know, a JT Miller and a first round pick back. I mean, you're asking for, if you're trading a forward back, or you're
totally if, you know, I think probably more Miller. Because even though Hayes has struggled here and been criticized, I don't know if they're trading that upside. So I see what you mean. A young roster player and a pick. Yeah, it's fair. The problem is, if it's a team like New York, how many more times can they make that trade?
Right.
St. Louis, Yandel. But yeah, I see. I think he's right on there in terms of probably what the market bears, maybe a little bit more, but maybe not.
Or if you're trading Dustin Byfuglien to the Philadelphia Flyers, you're asking for a first-round pick, and you're asking for Braden Schenn.
Yeah, but the Flyers aren't trading for him. Flyers are out of it also.
Right.
I know what you're saying. Example.
Just that type of trade.
Sure, I understand. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment for the year 2015. We want to hear from you on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment for the year 2015.
This isn't Bruce Springsteen.
It isn't. It's okay. We'll start 2016 off with Bruce. We'll be back on air Saturday, January the 2nd, as the Jets play in San Jose against the Sharks. So we'll be back on air Saturday, January the 2nd.
Metallica.
This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Some business hours for the Bernstein's Deli over the Christmas season. Tomorrow they are going to be open. The store will close at 4 o'clock. They're closed Christmas Day. Boxing Day, they are open for breakfast starting at 11 in the morning. They'll also be open on New Year's Day. So if you're looking to shake off that New Year's Eve hangover with a brunch place,
I strongly
recommend Bernstein's Deli.
Or you play a little outdoor hockey and then you grab a bite to eat before you watch the Winter Classic, something like that, you know?
I'm somewhat more interested in the Winter Classic this year because I think it's not a forced rivalry, Boston and Montreal. I think it's a great rivalry. It's unfortunate that the Habs are really struggling at this point. They're 1-9 in their last 10 and they can't score. But you sort of hope maybe
they were really good, Drew.
I told you they were really good when they had Carey Price in net and everything was clicking for them, but they've really been struggling since Price went down.
I agree with you. I'm excited for that one. I remember last time I was in Montreal was 2013, and I was talking to people, and I always like to talk hockey with people because in Montreal that's all they want to talk about, right?
Sure.
And almost everybody there hates the Bruins more than the Leafs. Like, the Habs fans really don't the Bruins. And that goes back to what happened with Chara and Pacioretty and all that stuff. And it goes back to the 1970s and before that.
I think it also has a function of the Leafs haven't been good in forever, and then they've never had a playoff. When was the last time the Leafs and the Habs met in the playoffs?
Oh, a long time ago.
It was like in the 70s, I think, 60s or 70s.
Yeah, so I mean, it's been forever.
Leafs were in the West for a really long time, right?
Sure, and there's no real rivalry there except for the fact that it's shoved down our throats, six times a year on a Saturday night or whatever.
And maybe if the Leafs get Steven Stamkos, it might be a rivalry in a couple years.
Well, that'll be, of course, the interesting one. @IllegalCurve is our Twitter feed if you want to get in as we sort of finish off our recap of the 2015 Winnipeg Jets season.
Are we going to get to ask Santa for something?
Sure. You can ask for what do you want from Santa for the Winnipeg Jets, Ezzy? Or on top of that as well, what's your New Year's resolution maybe for the Winnipeg Jets or for yourself?
I'm not a really big New Year's resolution guy. I have so many issues that I don't know that if making one resolution is going to fix them. Right? I mean, like, eat better, drink less, exercise more.
Better chance of passing a UN resolution than that.
Pick any resolution you want. And yeah, I'm down for that. But I just hope that, obviously things are better for the Winnipeg Jets towards the beginning of 2016 and at the end of 2015 than they have been. I mean, it was a great year for the Jets, though, making the playoffs for the first time since coming over from Atlanta. Mm-hmm. But I mean, as far as kind of big picture thing, I mean, I just want to continue having a great time and hanging out with you guys on the show. I love doing it. So, I mean, let's have a good 2016, just like we had a good 2015.
You know, we had a critical eye towards looking back at 2015. I mean, as he mentions, the playoffs. And as a whole, if you think about it growing up, at least for us with the Jets the first time around, the playoff games are what you remember most.
Sure.
You know, aside from those landmark moments like the Solani goal and such. And so just to be able to feel that again, and how important the games are and how much better the quality of play is and how it captures the city, that was the highlight of the year. Like, that's what makes it fun. Like, coming to this station to do this show every Wednesday and Saturday is always fun. I mean, we're talking hockey, we're having the best time. When you get to talk hockey during a playoff series, that's like next level. Mm-hmm. You know, that's hard to beat, and so
like the players, you work the regular season to get to those playoff games and to be able to analyze and everything else.
For sure, because you're analyzing all year and you're watching all year and you're taking it in, and the listeners are and the fans are and everybody, and everybody's on Twitter and all that. So it's a blast. But overall, just thank people for listening to the show, and we're certainly appreciative of the support. And sometimes we make fun and stuff, but I think we always say that we're appreciative of the support. And putting the time in is, as I said, is a blast. But it certainly would be nothing if we didn't have people listening and tweeting and doing all that.
And you guys might be going on a little vacation, but
why don't you mention it again? You haven't mentioned it enough times.
Not this guy.
Do you want to give out our addresses too? Maybe our alarm codes while you're at it.
I don't even know your address. You've never told me.
That's because you're not invited over.
But no, I'm doing
still waiting on that baby gift. By the way, it's December 23rd.
I'm doing pre and post games. Two with Darren, Red Wings on the 27th and Pens on the 29th, and then I'm doing New Year's Eve with Rick. So, I mean, I'm not going anywhere. I have some work to do. So
the Jets haven't won three games in a row this year, but Rick and Darren just won. That's three Ezzies in a row.
Wonder if they'll win an Ezzy, of course, coming up on Saturday the 26th as they talk about that. I should mention, you mentioned Twitter, and you know we always appreciate the feedback. Yeah. It's a great conversation is actually happening right now on our Twitter feed. There's too many tweets for me to read them out, but keep it going at Illegal Curve. There's a great conversation back and forth about the future of Andrew Ladd and the future of Dustin Byfuglien and what Kevin Cheveldayoff should do and when he should do it. Some people saying wait till the deadline, it'll drive their value up.
Shout out to our boy Devin Slater there and Old Alpha and of course Jets XOXO.
The thing is this next 2 months is going to be, from an organizational perspective and how it's going to all look, it's going to be very fascinating, these 2 months here. What happens from today, December 23rd to February 29th, so just over 2 months. How, I mean, never mind the play on the ice, where is this organization going? And you're gonna have a pretty good idea in that period of time. So it's going to be interesting to see the ebbs and the flows and how that all goes.
I'm also as interested as I am with what they decide to do with Byfuglien and with Ladd. If they decide to trade one, both, if they leave Winnipeg, I'm really interested in the effect that's going to have on two guys in particular, Brian Little and Blake Wheeler. Because that's sort of the Atlanta core. Those four guys, you know, have been together and sort of attached at the hips for so long. So I'm really interested in what's...
Throwing Enstrom there, too.
Yeah, but Enstrom's less, more under the radar than those guys.
Yeah, I think that's much of the crew. And I think also, Drew, it's fair. It's fair to say. I mean, those are their best players. True, sure. Their best players. The other aspect of it, though, is as of today, the Jets are 3 points out of the basement of the league.
Is it time to change things?
Well, no, if they didn't have those guys... Well, how much more is there to fall, I guess, is the point. Now, I know that doesn't go into, you know, different things and different analysis and 5-on-5 stuff, but just big picture-wise.
Sure. I mean, you know, Blake Wheeler, for all, you know, for all the sort of negativity. And
he's
know,
been great.
He's been great. He's still over a point a game.
He's been great.
I mean, you can't take that away from him.
No, he's been terrific.
That's it for this Wednesday evening. That's it for 2015 for NHL This Week and for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have to extend our big thank you today to Patrick Williams of NHL.com, to Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Free Press for joining us in the first hour for the roundtable. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Life, and to Keener Jerseys. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with all your Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Thanks to producer Alex, by the way.
Yeah, big thanks.
He
took it to Heaty Treat. He had it enjoyed. For Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, for myself, Drew Mandel, on behalf of all of us, the entire family at Illegal Curve Hockey, we wish you all the best in the holiday season. We'll see you again in 2016. Thanks for listening. Until January 2nd, this has been NHL This Week.